It's a way to start.
I should have cleared my throat before I came on the air, but it's not how it happened.
Hey, everybody.
Hi. I'm Tom.
I'm Jacqueline.
And we're doing Growing with NTI.
Yeah, we need to get that down better, like more like Glenn and Yolanda.
I don't know if I...
They're fun. We'll try and be more fun, y'all.
All right. Here we go. Anyway, we're going to start with the prayer.
Yes, we are.
And just with the openness of allowing all things to be, and again, I heard Larry talking a bit about opinions and commentary and whatnot, and really that's all that any resistance, any pain, any suffering, it's just commentary on what's going on what is, and the commentary and opinion gets to be just so realistic, and we think it's real, and so we endeavor to stay as present every moment that we can, every moment possible that we can stay present to what is real and what is the truth. So, amen.
Amen.
All right.
That's great.
We are on page 39 of NTI, which is at the top of the page is NTI Matthew chapter 19. we had started this, but we didn't go, we went but a couple paragraphs in, so we're going to start right at the top. The symbol of marriage is the symbol of joining. But I have told you before that it is not what you do that is important, but why you do it. Do not let the form of what you do confuse you. Always look beyond the form to your heart. What do you find there? Is joining reflected in your heart? If not, then you are not joining, and it is joining you must seek. And the symbol of marriage is a symbol. It's a symbol of joining. It's a symbol of joining for those who are present to that purpose, who are not looking for a gain. They're not in it to win it. They're not in it to establish themselves as another concept, but they are in it to join. Just like joining the military is joining, but again, it's not what we do. It's why we do it. Now, if you're joining the military because you want to shoot a lot of people, then that's not really doing it for joining. That's not really in the spirit of joining. there is joining that happens, and it happens. What I realize and what I have come to understand in myself is that when I join, I can feel what we used to call a tickle in the heart. And you feel it in your heart, and you feel that connection with another element, another being of consciousness. There's a recognition of the unity, of the sameness, of that quality of eternal love and life. So it's really why. It's the motivation and the purpose behind everything we do. There's a lot of things that are done for for traditional purposes or for show, or they're done going through that, we've all been through that life, and we understand the emptiness of it. And when we're just going through the motions, the decision and the desire and then the decision to truly join and to truly to join in order to truly join the self-made self has to dissolve, because two self-made selves cannot join, because they're just so established in only those own immediate interests. So again, it is why we do what we do. That is important.
Yeah, and of course this portion is talking about that portion of the Bible that says, you know, what God has joined together, let no man put asunder. And so, and that's what really this is really talking about, because you know, the fact is we are joined. We're not these bodies. Bodies can't join. Separate individual wills can't join. The ego that I've made for myself can't join with the ego you've made for yourself, as Tom was saying. But so what this is talking about is just really the recognition that we are in fact joined. And you can have the recognition that you are in fact joined if you're willing to be vulnerable, if you're willing to let down your defenses, if you're willing to let go of your belief in lack, limitation, bodies. That's when you can be in recognition that you are in fact joined. That's all that this is talking about.
Thank you. Do not expect joining to have a specific form or follow certain rules. I'm back to reading now. Those are the book's words. Let go of everything you think you know about joining, for what you know has not brought you to be joined. Ask me to lead you to joining, and then let go and let me lead.
Okay, it says let go of everything you think you know about joining, so you all can just ignore everything we just said.
The world is a world of differences, and things seem to change there. But the truth is always the truth and does not change. Do not be confused. It is not by keeping things the same within the world that one identifies truth, for the truth has never been in the world. Do not question my guidance. You are lost and do not know. Trust in my guidance and follow me, that you may learn and realize and know the truth has always been true. Again, to know that the truth has always been true, do not question my guidance. This is a master speaking to his followers. The master is within, the master here is speaking as sometimes we might get confused as if it's a separate entity, that's not the case. And that's where the joining is. When the personhood dissolves, we understand that we are the master, that these words of wisdom come from the deep well of wisdom within our own heart and lead us where we would be. Back to the reading. Following my path is following a path that leads you from the world to the truth. As you follow the path, the things in the world will become less important to you. Let them fall away as your desire for them ends. You do not need the world. It is me that is needed now. This paragraph to me is just a beautiful example of grace, just a beautiful demonstration of how grace happens and how it just transcends what one has struggled to give up and to let go of and to say, I don't want this anymore. Please take this from me. But there, we say, take this, you know, take this from me. If it doesn't go, that means that there's really only one thing that it means, is that we haven't fully let it go. We're still holding on to it at some point. There's still a holding on. And so again, it's asking for the dissolution, to dissolve. Let that self-made self dissolve. And it's just really, let them fall away as your desire for them ends. It's not let them, even though it's not saying, even though you desire the hell out of them, try to let them go. That's not what it's saying. It's saying your desire for them ends, and that's when you let them go. It's not this struggle and this constant berating oneself because you haven't let it go. You know, it's, you know, something I read, and I use it very often. I read it in the Course in Miracles, and it was just two words, and it was infinite patience. And that, and whenever the Spirit talks to us, it's talking to us as if it says, be therefore perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. So it's saying, be what you are. Infinite. If it's talking about infinite patience, it's saying that we have that capacity to be infinitely patient. And if we have that capacity, that's what God is. That's what God is. It's infinite patience. Back to the reading.
No, I'm good. You did a great job.
Become as little children, free of expectations and burdens, open to enjoy your freedom and to love your world. For the world is to be loved as all things are to be loved. For love is the only purpose for all things.
Yeah, I think that paragraph speaks exactly to what you were just saying. You know, it's it is a matter of letting things fall away, and as you said, it's not this struggle that we want to make of it. And he says very clearly, as you follow the path, the things in the world will become less important to you. And then, you know, as you let go of your attachment, it's a matter of not grasping anymore, not needing things to be any particular way. That it's letting go of the attachment that's being talked about here. And then he says, so you can then become as little children. You can be free of those expectations and the burdens that you're, you know, this has got to be this way or I'm not going to be happy. No. Once you let go of the attachments, of the need for things to be a certain way, then you can live freely in the world, then you can enjoy the world, because what this is a recognition that this is just an extension of God. It's all an extension of God. It's all God. Enjoy it. That's what we're here for. And if you don't have to have it any particular way, you are free to enjoy it. That's it.
That's great. Thank you. Yeah, there's if you're attached to the world, it's impossible to enjoy because there's always the fear that it's going to disappear, that there's not enough, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, thank you. Continuing the reading. I have told you that it is not what you do that is important, but that it is why you do it that matters. And that reason is love. For if you do anything for a purpose other than your love for me, that thing you do is not important. The only purpose is love, and my love is the only love. There is no other kind of love. And I understand that love to be just exquisite acceptance, not even just appreciation of every difference and every emanation of this consciousness, without having an opinion on it, without having a commentary, even just a running commentary is just it's a burden. So
yeah, and you know, and this is the love that we talked about this weekend in the gathering. This is the love that gives without the need to get. This is just total extension, and that's what God is. God is love. God is extension. God is freedom, and that's what's being talked about here.
Back to the reading. When I say love the world, I am not asking you to love the world for what it is. I ask you to love the world for what it isn't. The world is not a place where the Son of God is captive. It is a place where he is free. It is not a place of conflict and fear. It is a place of one will and great love. Look with me to see what the world is not. In seeing what it isn't, you shall see what it is, and you shall love it.
You know, and that's what we were just talking about. What you get to see is that the love, the world is an expression of the ultimate love of God, right? Because God is like, do whatever you want to do. You have absolute and total freedom to build and create and you know, there's no good, there's no bad. Have at it. So it's only, you know, it's only the judging of good and bad that causes a problem. This is total freedom. And once you see it, not as good and bad, once you see it as total freedom, as a manifestation of the total power that we are, that we have, that love is, that God is. Once you see that, then you're grateful for every little thing, for everything that we used to call good and everything we used to call bad, for everything, for every little thing, for every big thing. You know, I was listening recently to an audio in the MPP course on Sufism that Regina had recorded, and she was talking about that time when she had a vision where she was an apple, but from this apple's perspective, she could look out, you know, not with eyes, right? Because an apple doesn't have eyes, but she could look out, and she saw everything around her as energy. Or as light, and it was, and so, you know, in objects, this light was really compacted, and where there were no objects, there was still light. It just wasn't this compacted light, and so the cool thing was, this energy existed even in the space between the objects. So, you know, this is just one, the world is just one ball of oozing energy, even in what we would call empty space. It's just this absolute pulsating extension of love and light and energy. And how can you not be thankful for that? How can you not be overwhelmed by that? Mm. It's amazing.
Yeah. That was beautiful, honey. Thank you.
Thanks, Regina. She's the one with a vision.
And I'm listening to a Nisargadatta meditation, and in it he says, "You already are what you are. Find out what you are not and be free from it." And to me, that was just a real pointer for me. Just a very direct and piercing, right to the learning center within me, and it was really helpful.
Sweet.
Continuing the reading, the truth is always true, and the Spirit of God is one. So the will of God must also be one. This is why I ask you to lay yourself aside. It is so you will know that you are one with God. You know, we hear things like the paragraph I just read. We have read it over and over and over again. It starts to sound redundant. It starts to sound robotic. But
that's the
paragraphs. Those are the paragraphs for deep contemplation, yeah. Deep meditation. Yeah. The truth is always true, and the Spirit of God is one. So the will of God must also be one. This is why I ask you to lay yourself aside. It is so you will know that you are one with God.
Mm. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean that's the and I did an interruption and I apologize, but that it really is the punchline. I mean, like you say, it we're one, but no, we're one. And so when we're believing that we're not, when we're believing that we're that we have these limitations and that I need to be afraid of my brother, and you know, and ooh, I'm a little afraid of this, and that makes me a little nervous. That's not the recognition we're talking about here. That's the opposite of the recognition we're talking about here.
Right.
So you got to really look, like you said, look deeply at those words. What is this saying? We're one.
Right.
Not only are we one with each other, we're one with God. We are one with all that is. Oh my God, we're all that is.
Yes. All right. Nice. Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you for helping me out with that, honey. The world is something you must let go of, because your will is something you must let go of, and the world is your will. Those who are able to let go will know the truth, which is the reward of heaven. Those who hold on to the world and love it for what it is will continue to look for their reward and will wonder why they have not found it. I tell you, your reward is not in the world. Let go of the world and all it means to you, and I will show you where meaning lies. The world is your will, and if we can't, you know, anything that you can't let go of, you're a slave to. We're a slave to anything we can't let go of. Voluntary, anything I can't say, I just walk away with it, leave it alone, walk away from it, leave it alone. Anything that has power, then it's. The tail wagging the dog. And if I am so attached to this world because I think that I am this world, right? As far as the I thought is concerned, everything in this world revolves around it. Not always for its good, but it still revolves around it. It's got a lot of commentary on all the stuff that revolves around it. But nonetheless, everything revolves around this I thought. And it takes tremendous depth of introspection to let that I thought go. And I'm speaking from my experience, because I am looking at this I thought for some time now, and just working with it, and the power of it is just it's ununderstandable. There is no logic to it. It promises nothing. It promises nothing in the way of joy. Just in all it promises is vindication. And so to insist on holding on to this world and the idol that it revolves around is really just the recipe for suffering.
Yeah. The idol that revolves around the hero of the dream.
Right.
Yeah. As we're talking about this, I'm reminded of that scene in The Matrix where Morpheus is telling Neo, he's like, you know, most people are here so enmeshed, so hopelessly inured to this version of reality that they don't want to be awakened, that they're not going to let go. And so that's what, you know, we are so attached to the idea of how things work and form that we can't let that go. So I'm going to work really hard. I'm going to be a really good student, and I'm going to get my reward, damn it. You know, I mean, I can't even let go of my concepts long enough to do what's in my own best interest, which is let go of my concepts, right?
Right. It's truly a program.
Yeah, it's a program. Yeah.
And you really want to hear the message. We interrupt this program for this this bulletin, you know. That's what we need, you know, because it is a program and it requires infinite patience, first of all, but it also requires vigilance.
Oh, I was going to say a willingness to quit believing our own crap.
Yeah, just to tremendous vigilance also, you know. Obviously, the crap is that program. It's not personal. It's not. But we all have, you know, we all have the same characteristics of that program running. We just have different names of our peripheral characters.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And.
But we're all still buying the same premise.
Right.
And you know, and I remember, and I think we've talked about this before. I remember picking up the Course in Miracles and it saying, "Your only problem is you think you're separate from God." I'm like, "Whoa, wait a minute! I got a lot of problems."
Right. Right,
that's
right,
not
right,
what
I'm... Right. We'll get to that.
Yeah, right.
We'll get to that later on.
But the truth of it is, that is the problem.
That is.
I believe I'm separate from God. And what does that mean? That means I believe I'm separate from you. I believe I'm separate from everything in my environment. I believe that there's a separate me that has to be protected as against a separate you. I believe that the only person that's going to look out for me is me. I believe that you can say something that'll hurt my feelings.
Right.
I believe that if I don't work hard enough, I won't eat. I believe that if I do work hard, I ought to be rewarded. I mean, it comes with a whole host. I mean, it runs your life. The program runs your life. And so you're asked to step out of that program. That's what's being done here, is you're asked to give up your belief in all of that long enough so that you can awaken from the strictures, from the confines, from the rules that operate within the program.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And which I find extremely important is not looking at why Tom does anything or anything. It's not about a Tom. It is an I thought. It is a system.
Right.
Right. There. This part of the system It has been named a Tom. And so I might start looking into this Tom and looking into this personality. It's not about any personality. It is about the system. It's about this system that we're trapped in. That is what, that's where my examination takes place, in that system, in the power of that I thought. And then also conversely, in the power of the I am also. There has to be a haven. I can't continually just look at the I thought. I look at the I thought when it shows up. When I can, I'll stay in the I am. The I thought is guaranteed to show up. You know, I mean, it shows up, and that's when I look at it, and that's enough for me.
And so that last line, and I don't know if you read it or not, the last line of this chapter says, "I tell you, your reward is not in the world. Let go of the world and all it means to you, and I will show you where meaning lies." Mm-hmm. So we desperately cling to this set of beliefs. And it's the clinging itself that keeps us that keeps us inured in the right. in the suffering, that keeps us from seeing the real meaning outside of that.
Right.
It's a leap of faith.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It's our attachment to the devil that we know.
Right.
As opposed to looking out at paradise.
Right. So we keep turning to the same things. It's like, I'd like to believe that if I do what my heart's telling me, I'll be safe.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. And so I keep doing the same old
stuff. Right. Okay. Put that chapter to bed.
I think we did. The next one we're supposed to read from the Bible.
Oh, okay.
So let me do that. Okay. Let's see. I hope y'all are still there. let's see. Maybe we're talking to ourselves, but we're always doing that, right? Let's see. I'm going to read from the... Here we go. Okay. Matthew chapter 20, verses 1 through 16. I'm going to read this. It's got the little Bible icon there that says, please read the Bible. So let me get there. Okay. Chapter 20, verses 1 through 16, the parable of the workers in the vineyard. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. About 9 in the morning, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, "You also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went. He went out again about noon and about 3 in the afternoon and did the same thing. About 5 in the afternoon, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, "Why have you been standing here all day doing nothing?" "Because no one has hired us," they answered. He said to them, "You also go and work in my vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first." The workers who were hired about 5 in the afternoon came, and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. "These who were hired last worked only 1 hour," they said, "and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work in the heat of the day." But he answered one of them, "I am not being unfair to you, friend. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the one who is hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous?" So the last will be first, and the first will be last. That's it.
Thank you. Right. So have we confirmed we got company?
I don't know.
All right.
I don't know. Can you guys hear us?
It feels so lonely. Anybody hear us out there?
No, apparently they can't hear us. All right. Maybe we just...
Okay.
Oh,
Chapter 20.
Hi, Becky. Hi, Becky. Thank you.
The first will be last, and the last will be first, because there is only one. The confusion comes in seeing many, in seeing separateness, and therefore seeing different contributions, and some who are deserving of more than others. If you see only one in this story, within this scripture, that one is all the same, and that one deserves the same reward for agreeing to come and work. This is what I would have you learn. There are not many. There is only one. And that one that you think is many is the Son of God, created by the Father as one, and so he is one. I just wanted to reflect on what you read also in the Bible. There truly was an agreement with the first workers, but and the landowner was true to his word, and but when somebody else got the same, you saw the I thought kick in. They had gotten what they agreed to. He was true to his word, but you see the I thought kick in, right? It's like it didn't kick in until somebody else had to enter. There had to be somebody else that entered the picture and was getting equal pay, which didn't seem fair to them.
Or to us.
Or to us.
Hearing the story now, you go, wait a minute. That's
right.
Not fair.
Right.
This is what we're talking about. These are the rules we're
right.
talking
These
about.
Right, these are the rules.
These are the rules for a world of separate people with
right.
separate interests.
Right.
Those are the rules.
Yeah.
And that was a violation of the rules, and that's why we're pissed off when we
right.
read that story.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's really unquestioned. It's like, okay, I get it. It's just really, the I thought is just really intrusive, really enmeshed, and really needs to be constantly observed when it shows up.
And observed for the way that it's entrenched, you know, observed for the fact
right.
that you, I mean, when you read this, you go, it's not fair. And then you're like, now what's he trying to explain to us why it's fair? I mean, that's how entrenched it
right.
is.
Right.
We usually don't even question it. Now
right.
we're looking at Jesus, somebody who we admire, and
right.
you know, telling us that something else is fair.
Right.
And so you can see that you so live in these rules that you've made that it's hard to even question it when Jesus is saying,
right.
well, wait a minute.
Right. Right. Right.
Yeah.
That's great. The top of page 41.
Becky says root cause.
Okay. Root cause. Root canal.
Yeah, I think she's probably talking about that root cause analysis. Yeah, I think this is
right.
probably more like the trunk of the tree, this whole
yeah.
idea of, you know, of the belief in separation. Yeah.
Right.
The root
yeah.
cause of all root causes.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do not focus on differences. Let them fade from your sight. Do not think that you deserve more or less than your brother, or that you have more or less than your brother. You are the same, deserving of yourself and one with your Father in heaven. There could be nothing else you need and no difference between you.
Yeah, it's just hammering home again and again and again. If you don't have any needs, how could you have to get yours before your brother gets his? I mean, it's only the needy. It's only the limited person. You know, and again, we talked about that. We talked about that on Sunday where Bryn Haskell, when he was when he was channeling Yeshua, he said, let me see if I can find it here real quick. Maybe I can, maybe I can't. Give me just a second to look at that. Here it is. He says, within the kingdom of God, there's only one host and there are no hostages. What does it take for you to realize that there are no hostages? That, you know, one person doesn't lose and another person gain. What does it take for you to realize in simplest truth that you are not a body? For you believe, do you not, if you perceive yourself to be a body, that you need... Does it matter what you need? Of course not. You need shelter. You need food. You need money. You need warmth. You need clothing. You need love. You need love. You need love. All of which you need to allow yourself to believe that you are a being separate from others, but somehow still in control of your own life. As long as you would perceive yourself to be a body, you must believe in sacrifice, and you cannot, hear me well, understand love. You know, it's the denial of the joining. It's the denial of the oneness. I mean, this is it exactly. And what does it stem from? It stems from the idea that you are a body that needs something. Hmm. Yeah. Right? If you need nothing, then you have nothing to fear, nothing to strive for, nothing. I mean, how can you have more than me? How can I be worried about what you have? You can't have more than me. There's no you to have more than me.
Right. Following in that vein, it's like what we think of. It's saying, are you body or are you spirit? Right. I think most of the world thinks that, okay, now I'm a body. When I die, I'll be a spirit. That's not what this is asking us to do. This is asking us to see our truth now. Not wait until the body dies. Okay. Where are we at?
13, top of 41. Oh. The differences.
The differences that you believe in are differences of the world. But I have already told you that the world is temporal and matters not. It is the eternal that is the truth. And I have also already asked you to let go of the world. And so you must let go of the differences you see in the world. The Spirit of God is one. There are no differences. The Spirit of God is the life force within each and every being on this planet.
Yeah, and even that is kind of couched in separatist terms. I mean... You know, it's not within anything. It's like, the analogy Regina uses, which is, you know, all you have is Play-Doh. You can make a village out of your Play-Doh.
Right.
You can make a war out of your Play-Doh. You can make, you know, the cosmos out of your Play-Doh. But it's still Play-Doh. It's
right.
All God. There's
right.
No, it's not, this is Play-Doh and this is something else. It's all Play-Doh. It's all God. Yeah, so there's no differences to be seen. The only differences are the ones that you want to see, and that just shows you the power that you have as God. Oh, I want to see something different. Bam, you get to see it.
Right.
It doesn't make it different.
Right.
And what you're being asked to do is just understand that.
Yeah. That's why I was alluding to the life force, because it helps me in contrast with other quote-unquote human beings.
Right.
When I think of the life force, I recognize the life force that runs through me is the same exact life force. And when I mean life force, I mean the consciousness, the unadulterated consciousness, the pure consciousness before needs, wants, desires. That is the same. That is exactly the same. And so that's what I was alluding to there. The Spirit of God is one. There are no differences. Be willing to let go of them. The truth is always true, and this you will see when you lay aside your belief in differences. It is your belief in differences that blinds you to the light of life. Be willing to let go of your belief in differences, that you may see the life that is me.
There you go, the life force.
Yeah. Well, what do you know? Specialness is a form of difference. One whom you see as special, you see as different. And so you ask for more or less for this person within the desire of your heart. Beware of your feelings of specialness, for any feeling that will separate your brothers within your heart will split you off from the kingdom of heaven. Again, that's asking your brother to be something different than he is.
Yeah.
And laying a whole bunch of expectations upon him, or being very suspect of him.
Well, and again, what we looked at was this whole idea of being in special relationships is what you're really asking your brother to do, this your special someone to do, or and that might be your, it might be, you know, a family member or, you know, or whomever you have a quote-unquote human relationship. What you're asking that person to do is confirm what you believe about yourself. Please tell me that I am who I think I am. Please tell me that I'm bright, I'm attractive, I'm fun to be with. As long as you tell me all those things, we got a good thing going here. Mm-hmm. And when you challenge me, when you say I'm not bright, I'm not attractive, I mean, whatever those things are that I believe about myself, then it doesn't feel so loving anymore. Right. Because you're not doing your function that I have assigned you. The function that I have assigned you is to tell me that, yes, this is who I am.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, so it's just that relationship is used to reinforce the sense of self.
Right.
The separate sense of
right,
self.
Right. It's also great because being in the relationship, you get to see your self-hatred where you might not really be able to see it. You might not identify it so much so as self-hatred. You know, unless you had somebody to bounce it off of, because otherwise it might just be like, oh, the guy's alone, he's just depressed, man. And you just think you're depressed or something like that, you know, and you'd be like, okay, yeah, I'm depressed. Give me the medication. But you get to see that you got all these hang-ups within yourself, about yourself, and you know, are you willing to look at them? Are you willing to look at them straight in the face and know that and the truth is always true, and know that the truth is always true, and it's not a bing bang process. There's a lot of attachment to that self made self.
Listen. And on a real practical level, this, of course, has been a recurring theme with me and Tom. And that is, you know, when we've gone through some really heavy stuff, some really just, you know, earth-shattering stuff, the question that I'm asking is, who does he think he's in a relationship? I can't believe he's thinking that. I mean, my mind doesn't even work that way. Who is he talking about? What does he think is, I mean, because that's what throws me with Tom. I'm not sure that that's been true in other special relationships that I've had. Maybe. It might be true in the relationships with my family, with my mom, my dad, my sisters. But particularly with Tom, it's like, what? Who's he talking about? Who would even do the sort of thing that he's accusing me of doing? You know, just like, you know, What do you mean that was selfish? No, I did this. You don't understand. I did this because, you know, I wanted this person to, you know, I was thinking of this other person. And so, I mean, but it's his characterization of me, you know, when he tells me why he's mad or when I figure out what's going on or why we're arguing, I'm like, what? Who's he talking about? And that's what's thrown me over and over and over again, this relationship. That's the one that makes me go, screw this. I don't need this. I'm out of here. It's like, if he doesn't know me by now, or if he doesn't know my heart, and see, that's what I think bothers me is, look, I'm a good person. I care about other people. I care about him. So you can see that even though it's a good image, it's a wholesome image and a holy image and that I have of myself, right? I can hear this. But that's what really throws me when we fight. It's like, I would never do what he's just accused me of doing. I'd never do that. You know, nobody who has all the characteristics that I have would do that. And when I go, my God, he doesn't know me at all. Like I say, that's when I go, I'm done. I'm hitting the road.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
You know, it is obviously the well of love is eternal. The well of hatred is awfully deep, though. Also, it's obviously it's not real. I come to that, but there is the introspection that takes and the power of that I thought and the protection of it and the defense of it and everything that goes with it. Be willing to let go of them. Okay. To separate your brothers and have...
Wait. No, it's the next last paragraph on that page.
Oh, love your brothers.
Uh-huh.
Love your brothers as one with my love. In this way, you will know truth. In this way, you will know heaven. In this way... you will know life.
Interesting that sentence, love your, the way you read it was interesting. Love your brothers as one with my love. Or is it love your brothers as one with my love? Because if it's, I mean, that sounds silly. It seems like semantics, but love your brothers as one with my love is, you know, that love we were talking about a while ago, the love that doesn't seek to get, the love that only extends, the love that, you know, doesn't need to that self-reflection, doesn't need you to tell me who I am. Because, again, as we read in, or as I read, I think I read to you guys on Sunday from the other voice, it's like, I couldn't love you wholly if I did, Yeshua was telling us, I couldn't love you wholly if I didn't know I was whole and complete. If I needed something, then I couldn't love you. It's only from that knowledge of being whole and complete that you can extend love.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, so that's okay. What I heard in that inflection.
There was a comma there the first time I read it. It's gone now, but it was there the first time I read it. To separate your brothers and have expectations of them is not to see them as one. They are one together. They are one with you. They are one with God. Whatever you expect of your brother, you expect from me. If you expect that he is separate from you, you expect that I am separate from you too. And because of this, you are lost from heaven. I was just going to say, you can't separate out parts of, as it says in the Course, parts of the sonship, you know. But you can't say, okay, Jesus, you're in my camp. Those two over there, you know about them, right? So no need to say anymore.
Yeah, you either believe in separation or not. It's like being a little bit pregnant.
Right.
You know, and like the Course says, you either believe this Course completely or entirely, or not at all.
Right.
there's no in between here.
Right. Yeah.
It's, either believe in separation or not.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it is, takes great vigilance. And I say that over and over again, because it is, so, because like you said, this program is running. And even after this, after we're done sharing here, that program might still, will start running again.
Yeah.
You know? And it's important to really keep an eye on it, to recognize when that program runs, you know,
Let me tell you what, that program runs in the thinking mind. That it runs there, and it's not going to quit running in the thinking mind. Now, you can learn to ignore the thinking mind and drop into your heart, but that is the program of the thinking mind. It just is. Now, the thinking mind can be used as a tool. You know, how do I get from, you know, Southside Drive to, you know, to Dixie Highway, right? But if you're thinking about things, if you're thinking in concepts, that's the program that's running.
Right. I find also there's a low energy that I may not be thinking, but there's a low energy of being separate, of identifying, of the primal identity of being separate. There's that low energy that runs also, that is a program, that's part of the program.
They have an energy.
It's just a sense of separateness.
Yeah.
It's low energy.
Yeah.
A sense of being separate. It's just a low energy.
We are, I know we are close to finishing here, but we're also close to being out of time. It's 11:27.
Okay. Do we can get through these? Got no. Three quick paragraphs.
No, I don't.
Okay.
Do what you want to do, honey.
I'll read until our time's up.
Okay, fine.
I say, love your brother. Serve him as you would serve me. And as you do, you serve yourself. For you have acknowledged that it is all the same, and that for its sameness, you are grateful. You will go far on your gratitude for sameness. I say to you, gratitude for sameness will carry you to heaven. That is the cardinal, the hugest threat to the I thought, sameness. You know, the we watched a movie last night, and it was really interesting because it was about a guy who went back in time, and it turns out that by the end of the movie, there were four of them, four of him.
Same guy.
The same guy. Each one of them wanted to kill the other three of him. So it was that internal I thought. It was not. It had no relation to a person. It wasn't any relation to a person. It was that current of energy running through that body mind at that time that made it the primal instrument. It was just so interesting to watch that Hector 1 wanted to kill Hector 2 and 3 and 4, you know, and it was just a trip to see how powerful the I thought is.
There was no joining there. I mean, it was really funny because it's the same guy, right?
Right.
Just from a different point in time. But he didn't give a heck for any of those other guys.
No.
He was out for who he was in that moment.
Right.
And each of them were that
right.
It's really interesting to see. Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. You cannot be separated from God. He lives in your holy, sacred heart. No, you can't be separated from God, but you sure can believe that you are. You can believe that you're separate from God, and you can believe that you're separate from your brothers. And that's what we're talking about. I absolutely agree with you, Mark Minn. You cannot be separated from God, but we don't know that. We think we are that. We think we've done that.
Yeah, it's always a check in the heart, you know, under, I always find the truth that you think about yourself comes true in relation to proximity. That means nearness of a fear. The nearer a tragedy comes, or death comes, You know, it's proximity is a good barometer to determine where you're at. You know, when the fire starts, right? You know, when you're that's why you don't practice in the frying pan. You know,
right.
You don't practice in the frying pan.
Right.
You'll be in there soon enough. You practice in peace.
Right.
When you're in the frying pan, then we see how you do.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
And that's what I'm saying.
I get you.
Anyway, we have arrived at 11:30.
We have. We love you guys. We're thrilled to be here with you, and that you all keep letting us come back week after week.
Yeah, we'll be back again next week.
Yeah.
Unless we get
booted. All right, we love you. Bye, guys.
Bye now.